Hi, this is Allison Sheridan of the NoSillaCast podcast, hosted at podfeet.com, a technology geek podcast with an ever so slight Macintosh bias. Today is Sunday, August 13th, 2006, and this is show number 55. Well, this is going to be an exciting week for the NoSillaCast, or at least for me. I'm doing two very special events. Monday night, that's tomorrow, I'm the guest speaker at the LA Pug, which is a local Mac user group. The name is actually the Los Angeles Portable Computing Group, which doesn't make the acronym work either, but they evolved from being a Palm users group, so I guess it still counts. Anyway, I've been on their message group for a while now, and I've never met a more helpful, pleasant bunch of folks. Never is anyone put down for being a bonehead or not knowing enough or any kind of derogatory comments at all. They're 100% positive in the responses, and there's a lot of good-natured humor on the boards. A lot of the people are self-deprecating as well, and I just love that. My one big fear is that I'm maybe not as advanced as they are. I sure hope they don't know as much about podcasting as they do about everything else. I'm really looking forward to it. My buddy Ron's going to go out there as my sidekick, and we're going to hopefully knock him dead. The second event is this Friday, the 18th. Yes, the day Snakes on a Plane comes out, so I know it's going to be tough to make time for it, but I'm going to be interviewed on a podcast called Views from the Coop. Paige Isinger is, maybe it's Isinger, I'm not sure. Anyway, she's one of the two smart chicks in this group, and her website is called twosmartchicks.com, and that's why I called her that. Anyway, if you want to check that out, she's a real good tech geek chick who's lived her whole life in Windows land, but she's very interested in learning about the Mac, so she thought it'd be fun if the two of us to get together, and then we could really share some fun ideas. I'm really looking forward to it, because Paige is definitely my people. I put a link in the show notes so you can subscribe to Views from the Coop to hear her great show. So just look for a little iTunes button embedded in the show notes, and you'll be able to subscribe. Well, looks like that's probably enough shameless promotion, so let's get on to the show. All right, I've been putting up with quality control director Steve's nitpicking for just about as long as I can take. He started out by giving us valuable corrections to make certain I wouldn't mislead you, but now he's gone too far. Remember last week I reviewed a tool called Tone Tester, that would test the pitch level differences in your ears. Well, quality control director Steve contacted me, and he said that I referred to the measurement units as being half a semitone, which would be stupid because they would have just called it a quarter tone if it was that. Well, Mr. Smarty Pants, I went back and I reviewed what I said, and what I actually said was that for the guy who had his hearing damaged, the guy who actually inspired the creation of the software, for him, the sound coming into his left ear would appear to be a half semitone higher than the sound coming out of his right ear. So there, you nitpicky thing, get off my back. Get a real life. No, I'm just kidding. Don't go off and sulk in a corner. We need you. We really do. Keep me honest. But do try to pay better attention in the future, okay? By the way, I actually know quality control director Steve, so it's okay for me to tease him in case you're thinking I'm being mean, like I said, those great people in the LA Pug are not mean. Let's see. A while back, I gave a great review of a product called Media Central for the Mac. Well, I don't know if the review was good, but it was a rave review of the product. Anyway, the software's from Equinux.com. That's Equinux.com. Media Central is a competitor to Front Row, Apple's built-in Media Center application. Media Center, in its first release, was far better than Front Row, in my opinion, and it was more stable, had a more pleasing interface, and it was also free, just like Front Row. I couldn't see why anyone would even give Front Row a chance, given the choice of Media Central, because it was such a great product. Well, listener James alerted me to the fact that Equinux has now come out with Media Central 2.0, and I thought I should give it a try. The one downside is that it's no longer free. It's $30, but you can run a demo version for free. The way they keep you from abusing that is it's limited in how long it'll run, so just for a couple of minutes. Let's see what we get for our $30 now. I have to thank Lorraine over at Equinux for responding to my request for a license code so I could review the software and be in it more than a couple of minutes. I was especially pleased that she answered because I actually wrote to a guy I'd talked to way back when I did the first review, And he's no longer with the company, but they had an automatic forward on his email to make sure no one got dropped. I thought that was pretty good customer service to start out, so I was happy then. The registration process is a bit of an overkill for shareware, I thought. They insist on your home address and phone number, like they're required fields. I really thought that was none of their business, so I just made up the information, and it still worked. Somebody's going to get some weird mail at some point. I'm not sure why they need that anyway. The registration is only for one computer, so keep that in mind. They make a point of warning you before you hit OK that it's for this serial number computer and no other. For a first step, I just launched the program to see if I could notice anything that was new. It takes about, 15 to 30 seconds to get in. It seemed to go faster as I went in and out a few times, but it gives you a visual indication that it's loading your movies, then your photos, etc. Most of the features look pretty much the same. I could browse my iPhoto library as before, but now I can browse a folder called My Pictures, which is kind of nice because I don't actually keep all of my photos in my iPhoto library, so I think I can probably put an alias to the other folder in there. But they told me to create that folder, but they didn't say where that folder should be. Kind of sitting there going, My Pictures. Well, my music and my movies work just like before by going straight to the music and movie folders in my user account. One feature that was enhanced was IPTV. With version 1, Meteor Central had a thing they called Web TV, which allowed me access to all kinds of interesting content streaming TV from the web, like the BBC shows you can get. Now, IPTV includes more of the videos we actually watch. It has nearly instant access to YouTube, Viral X, and Google Videos. It has a bunch of the top downloaded videos, which is a lot of fun. So you don't see like all of YouTube. You see like the top 100 and things like that. The one problem I had was IPTV did lock up Media Central, and so I had to force quit because I ended up with a spinning pizza wheel of death, and I didn't like that. When I first launched Media Central, it gave me a little preference thing, and I saw in there that they recommend increasing the cache and gave you control of that, which might have fixed my spinning pizza wheel problem. But after I had the spinning pizza wheel, I couldn't figure out where those preferences were. They weren't in, there's no real preference or no menu structure to Media Central, so there's no normal looking preference folder or preference file. So I dug around for a bit and finally I figured out it's actually a preference pane over in System Preferences. I also discovered that Media Central had installed a folder at my root directory called My Media Central and had created a bunch of empty folders in there called My Movies, My Games, etc. Ah, so that's where I'm supposed to put My Pictures because there's a My Pictures folder over there too. I didn't really like that it put it at my root directory. That's kind of a weird place. I mean, it won't end up getting, my backups would never pick it up and things like that. I don't know. It just seemed kind of a rude place. That's a place most programs don't put anything. But it turned out in the preferences, I was able to change that location. Anyway, back to the slowness problem. If with this spinning pizza wheel going on, I'm thinking if a 2 gigahertz dual-core Intel-based Mac has a slowness issue, then maybe the default on the cache should have been a little more, if that's really the problem. Not sure. I didn't go back and test that. One of my disappointments in the first version of Media Central was that when you brought up your photos, it played their music loop incessantly. It's kind of a nice little music loop, kind of pleasing, but when you hear it over and over and over again, it gets really old. So that was a complaint in the first version. Now in the new version, it comes up with the default music you have set in iPhoto for slideshows. That was a much better choice. I really like that, being able to pick my own music. Photos came up nice and snappy, and the format there is so much better than Front Row. I really, really like the way they do the photos. On the website, they had a big old thing about how they had integrated Skype into Media Central so you could call your buddy right after you watch a great movie using Media Central. Well, I have no clue to where that Skype interface is. I even launched Skype in the background in case that was necessary to have it show up in Media Central. I don't know. Might be a cool feature, but I couldn't find it. I happen to like the music and sound effects they play while you're tootling around the menus. The ones I said got old looking at photos, but I do like them. And it turns out in the preference pane now, you can shut both kinds of sounds off. They have music that plays, And they also have these really cool little sound effects. I mean, bloop, it's fun. I don't know, I like it. But if you don't, you can turn them off. You can also change the sound from the default, which is called guitar, to four other choices. I'm afraid going into music, it failed on me miserably. Just like in IPTV, the application locked up when I tried to play a playlist. Before it locked up, it wrote the name of my playlist on top of the word playing. So it was kind of like two words on top of each other, couldn't read either one of them. And that was kind of odd, so it was obviously having some trouble there. I had to force quit the application again. Bottom line is that version 1.2.1 is a great freeware app that's pretty stable, and I found version 2 to be pretty unstable, and if anything, maybe a bit slower. I would not pay $30 for this application, but I would pay $10 to $15 for version 1. I really hate to discourage these guys because the software in both revisions is gorgeous. It moves delightfully the way it moves around, it makes these gratifying noises as you bounce about in the menus, and it's still way better than the original Front Row. I don't know if they've enhanced that lately, I'll have to check that out. I'd like to ask them to keep working on it and let me know when it's more stable, but I wrote to them and I can't get through. The email addresses that I just used are now bouncing back. I'm wondering whether they've got my domain is blocked or something. I'm not sure why, but I tried two or three different addresses and I can't write to them. So if anybody at Media Central's listening by any chance, give me an email at allison@podfeet.com. Well, remember when we had a big love fest between the developers, Steve Harris of Feeder fame, and the podcast maker people? Well, the podcast maker people have a new little product that I really got a kick out of. It's called Voice Candy. It's a $12.95 shareware application, billed as a fun and useful recorder for your Macintosh. I downloaded Voice Candy from potionfactory.com/voicecandy, and it gave me a disk image just like any other application. The reason I mention that is they did a clever little thing in the disk image. Somehow, they included in there an alias to my applications folder. So all I had to do was drag the application to that little alias file, and it installed itself automatically. It's not a big deal, but it was a cute little touch. VoiceCandly's single job is to record any sound coming into a microphone on your Macintosh. Actually, I think it also records things coming out of your sound card. We'll get into that too. There seems to be a lot of times I'd like to just record something I'm hearing, and I don't care too much about the sound quality. When VoiceCandy opens up, you're given a grid of 9 special effects to add to the recording. These are parlor tricks at best, but of course I played with Chipmunk, Darth Vader, Robot, and Bad Sci-Fi. I'm going to stick with the normal recording options since that would be of actual utility. Below the 9 effects buttons is an obvious large red circular button for record, and then another button that changes from play to pause to stop depending on the context of where you are in your recording. If you click the record button, a levels meter shows you how loud you are and indicates if you're peaking out. When you're done recording, you click the stop button and then click it again as it is now turned into a play button. At this point, you have several options of what to do with your recording. You can save it to your desktop as an MP3, email it to someone through Apple Mail. I'm assuming it's only Apple Mail, but it might be set to just go to your whatever your default mail program is. I'm not sure. In my case, it was Apple Mail. You can also set an alarm for yourself, complete with a snooze function, or you can save it as a note, or you can send it straight to iTunes. So I guess if you just felt like belting out that song and recorded it and you want to throw it into iTunes, you could. Each of these actions are intuitive and have clear and simple instructions. I really like the alarm function. To set the time for the reminder, you're given a large analog clock, and you can drag the hour hand around in circles to set the time. Or you can just type it in, which is easier and more efficient and a little more accurate, but not near as much fun to watch. I set a reminder for myself, and it came up with a large yellow banner telling me the time and offering a snooze button with different delay options. I also tested it with sound coming out of my Mac. That's where I'm not sure if it came out and then got recorded by the built-in microphone or whether it was actually recording off the sound card. But anyway, I played a recording from a website and recorded it perfectly with little distortion. I tested emailing my recording to myself, and it instantly opened an email window with the recording attached. Worked just perfectly. Voice Candy can be launched with a global shortcut, it can be set to launch at login, and it can also run as a menu bar application. Overall, I think this is a slickly designed application with a beautiful interface that fits a small niche need, but does it really well. And I think it's a need that a lot of us have once in a while to make quick recordings on the fly. And it has the ever-important really cool icon. Looks like a red lifesaver. You know, the cherry ones we all pick out of the pack. Anyway, I think this is a really cool application, and for only $13, I really do think it's worth it. Since we're on the subject of recordings, now's a good time to talk about another shareware application called MP3 Trimmer from deepniner.net/MP3Trimmer. MP3 Trimmer is Mac only, but supports OS 9 and is a universal binary. It costs $10.95. The cool thing is they let you use the application without restriction, but they embed delays in it if you're not registered. So you click on a button and all of a sudden it'll say, okay, you have to wait 16 seconds because you haven't paid us. And it has little funny things that it says to you while you're waiting. So you're thinking, man, I really should give this guy $11. I do like a developer that lets me test a product, but make it just annoying enough to make it worth shelling out the princely sum of $11. MP3 Trimmer is designed to let you trim or join audio files that have been saved in the MP3 format. It's important that they be MP3s. It doesn't do any other formats that I could see. The interface has a lot of buttons on it, but it's still pretty intuitive. You simply drag your MP3 file onto the screen, or you can choose Open File from the menu. There's a slider on the left and one over on the right, and you move those around to set your in and out points, as they call them. I would have kind of called them trim points, but you get the idea. The nice thing is that you can nudge the endpoints with little plus minus buttons that move it about like 4/100ths of a second each time. So, you know, when you're trying to get that level of precision with a slider, it doesn't usually work. So they give you a little button you can push to barely move it. And you can hit a button that says try and hear whether you got it right where you wanted it. You can play back the section you're planning on keeping and even do some adjustments to the audio while you're working on it. You can adjust the gain. You can add audio fading in defined profiles, and you can fade in and out. MP3 Trimmer also allows you to join MP3 files together, which does happen once in a while. A lot of people seem to want to do that. To join files, under the Tools menu, select MP3 Joiner, and you'll see a new screen into which you drag the files you want to join. Tell it if you want to keep the ID3 tag of the first file, and then select a target folder to save the join file. And you're done. It checks the file type, bitrate, frequency, and whether they're both mono or stereo, because if your files aren't matched in those features, you won't be able to join them at all. It checks that before it does it, so you don't waste your time waiting. MP3 Trimmer did everything it said it could do. It executed all functions very quickly. So for $11, if you need this functionality, I could definitely recommend it. The most recent version even supports batch processing of a bunch of files, so go check it out at deepniner.net. Listener Scott asked if I would do a tutorial on how to make animated GIFs. I boasted that of course I would. I know how to do that because I read this book that taught me how to do it. Well, I sat down with Photoshop Elements and I looked around for the book and I can't find it and I can't remember how to do it either. Remember it had to do with making layers and you had to do some kind of save as GIF thing, but I was having trouble making the layers, making the thing, I don't know. So I said, let me go out on the web and see if I can find an easier way. Well, I found a website called GIFWorks.com. That's GIFWorks.com. On GIFWorks, if you can upload, or you can upload GIFs of your own from your disk or from a web location. I would assume you'd need to upload each of the frames necessary for your animated GIF. So like if it's a cat waving his arm that you want, you'd need to have a separate GIF for each position of the cat and its arm. If you really wanted to just animate text, you can do that right within GIFWorks. I'll walk you through how to animate some text. It was pretty fun. The interface lets you put in the text, and then you choose the font and the color. It gives you a preview of the font you've chosen, so you can switch it right then and pick, mess around till you get the one you like. And it's a bunch of screwy, weird little fonts, so that's kind of fun. And then you give it the width and the height, or you can choose an option that says standard banner size, so you can make those really annoying banners across the top of your website. In the next step, you choose your animation effect. from things like zooming in and out, rotating, sliding, all kinds of annoying effects. You can choose to set the number of times you let it repeat, or you can let it run forever. And you can even set the speed of the animation. Finally, in the menus, you actually type in the text, and it gives you a preview, and you can choose to accept it or make changes to any of the above options. If you like it, you can then right-click on it and save it to your desktop, or from the application, FTP it directly to your website. I put a sample in the show notes if you'd like to see how it came out. I'm not very creative, but you get the idea. Hope this helps, Scott. If GIFWorks doesn't meet your needs, let me know and I'll keep working on doing it by hand. I really should try to remember how to do that. Let's see, what's next? Well, a lot of people are yapping on and on about this whole Web 2.0 thing. And what's fun about it is that no one can actually define what Web 2.0 actually is. The result of that leaves most people thinking that everyone else gets it but me. Let me tell you, the main way you can tell if you're looking at a 2.0 site is if you can drag things around or make changes to pull downs and things like that, and the whole darn page doesn't have to repaint. A good example is Google Maps. That was the first time I ever saw where you could drag your location on the map around instead of like on traditional map sites where you hit an arrow to the right or the left and then you wait for the whole page to repaint only to figure out that you've gone the wrong way or you've gone too far. It's just so much cooler to be able to just drag things around. The other thing that's all the rage, and actually has been for quite a while, is the hunt for the perfect homepage, one that's tailored for everything you want. I think I talked about Google IG in here before, and there's one called Protopage a lot of people were excited about that I never really got, and a whole host of others. But an interesting one has emerged called PageFlakes at pageflakes.com. As you know, an interface that's easy to understand so I don't have to read instructions to get me started is crucial to whether I'll actually use it. PageFlakes is pretty smooth and easy to follow, and when I screwed up, it gave me little messages giving suggestions on how to fix it. That's a perfect way to learn for me. Let me try it and then tell me, okay, bonehead, this is what you should do. The idea of PageFlakes is that you add what they call flakes, which are little movable, windowy kind of areas on the page that give you access to other web-based applications like Flickr or your iCal calendar or even your Gmail account. I was able to add flakes from a whole host of choices and configure them to my own settings. I can now see my Gmail account incoming email and read it from there. I can read the RSS feeds I add, and I can see all of my upcoming appointments from my published iCal calendar. I can even add any POP3 email account as a flake. I tested it on my podfeet.com email address, and it worked just fine. It didn't have my address book, of course, but it did let me send and receive email, and I could create the addresses in there. I was able to slide the flakes around on the page easily to make a pleasing layout, and it was easy to delete some of the stock flakes that they had added to keep me help me get started. It says there's 102 flakes available already, but luckily they have them sorted into categories, including ones that are in specific languages. The one thing I didn't like was that if you click on Add Flake, then you see all 98 of them. Oh yeah, remember they said there's 102? Well, that's really 98, but who's quibbling? And from there on, you can pull down to the category in which you're interested. So let's say you want to add a bunch of flakes in the shopping category. So you find one you like, you click Add, and it adds it to your page, which you can now see, and then you can configure it. The problem comes in that you can't now just go back to the shopping category. You have to click Add Flake, click on Show to show all 102 again, use the pull-down to select shopping again, and now you can pick a second one. Not a huge problem, but still annoying. Once you have piles of flakes on the page, you may run out of room, but they give you tabs across the top to add more pages, and you can even rename them. I can picture one for work and one for home, something like that being real handy. Or maybe you want all your RSS feeds together on one, that sort of thing. It's really easy to use. You can just mess around with it really, really easily. You can also collapse and expand the flakes with a little toggle arrow to remove clutter too. So if you're in the market for a tailorable homepage with lots of options for web services, I suggest you give PageFlakes a try. Listener Neil sent in a link to a cute little Google mashup. Those are the applications people have been writing that take Google Maps and add more functionality to them. This one is sure to waste a whole bunch of your time and provide little or no utility to your workday. It's called Goggles, and it's available at isoma.net/games/goggles.html. As always, all the links are in the show notes, so you don't have to memorize any of this. The idea is, of this great little application, is you're the pilot of a little cartoon airplane, and you can fly around above Google satellite maps. You can control your elevation and your direction with the arrow keys, which is actually sort of like zooming and panning, but with a stupid little airplane above the map instead. You can speed up and slow down, and if you feel the need, you can fire a weapon. You can't actually shoot at anything, but somehow it's pleasing to go boom, boom, boom. Anyway, you know how we all are. You can start your flight in a bunch of different countries: England, Ireland, the Netherlands, Spain, France, Finland, Australia, China, Japan, a lot of cities in the U.S., and you can even fly on the Mars or the Moon. Like I said, it won't solve world peace, but it is fun. You can even crash the airplane if you so desire. Well, thanks, Neil, for getting me to waste a bunch of time and not get any of my work done on the podcast, so I'm recording late tonight. Remember a while ago I told you that I have a habit of adopting browsers? I need like a 12-step program because I just keep collecting them. At last check, I think I was running 8 of them, and I can never figure out why my disk fills up. Well, I put myself on a pruning program, and I got rid of 4 of them, like Shira, which was the one I only downloaded because it had a really cool fish icon. You know what a sucker I am for a cool icon. Well, it turns out there's a browser that's pretty well-known, but I had never tried before. It's called Opera. It used to be free, then they started charging for it by the time I heard of it. Hard to get my motivation up to load a browser that costs money when I have 8 good ones for free. Anyway, I found out about Opera is now free again from opera.com. Better load that one up. Opera includes a feed reader that works really well. I went to podfeed.com, well, gee, you're shocked that I started there, which has a built-in feed, so that in the URL address bar, there's a standard RSS feed symbol on the far right side. All I had to do was click on that symbol and pull down to RSS. I could also choose Atom as the other choice, but I still haven't figured out what that is yet. When I selected RSS, Opera asked me if I wanted to subscribe to the feed, and I said yes. Now in the top-level menu, there's a menu choice of feeds, and I could pull down to each of the feeds to which I've subscribed. I must not be doing my feed just right, because there's no name next to my feed in the list. I subscribed to SurfBits, and when I pull down on the feeds, I can see the name of his feed, so it's just operator trouble on my part, not Opera's fault. I pulled down to Manage Feeds, and it let me delete a feed I didn't want, and even edit the PodFeed feed, so I was able to add the name NoSillaCast to it. By the way, feeds show up as just another tab open in Opera. One thing I really liked is that Opera can be set to come back to where you left off after you quit. I frequently leave a browser open, sucking up system resources, just because I don't want to forget what I was working on. Sometimes I'll leave a tab open because I want to remember to go back to it. That may be not be everyone's cup of tea to open a browser with a bunch of tabs already open, so they have options you can set to just open at a home page or something boring like that. Opera boasts built-in BitTorrent, so you don't have to launch a separate application to play. I don't think I'll end up using it because I use Bits on Wheels for my BitTorrent, and I get to see the swarm and cool metrics like that. I looked back through my notes, and I thought I'd done a Bits on Wheels review already, but I searched PodFeet, and it looks like I haven't, so I'll do that soon. Opera has a ton of appearance customizations. The toolbars are pretty interesting. There's a standard ones like Tab, Status, and Address Bar, but there's also a view bar that gives you a place to find words in a page, a button for Find Next, and you can turn on the display of images on and off with a button. That's really handy if you're on dial-up or you're looking at a page and it's taken forever to bring that in. Just boom, turn the images off. I don't want to wait for that. I think my favorite thing in that toolbar was you can change the magnification of the page. Every once in a while, I surf to a website that has these teeny tiny little fonts. They look fine on a PC, but they look horrible on a Mac. And I've gotten pretty good at hitting Command Plus to increase the font size, but it'd be so much easier to just click that zoom button in. That'd be really nice. You can even change the formatting of a website to fit the width of your screen. I'm not sure how the heck they do that, but they do. The toolbars can be moved to the top, sides, or bottom of the window, which is kind of cool. Now that a lot of monitors and most laptops are going widescreen, we actually have more room on the sides than the top and bottom, so it'd be nice to be able to throw some menus over there. Opera lets you set preferences by site if you like. For example, if you want to allow cookies for your normal pages, but not for your banking website, you can have it different for the two kinds of sites. By site, you can enable or disable Java, pop-ups, GIF animations, automatic redirection, and all kinds of features. You can even choose that for certain sites to have Opera identify itself as other browsers. Oh, back on the disabling GIF animations, now that we learned how to make those, that makes me realize a great feature for this could be to use it on MySpace. I think you probably remember last week or the week before I was talking about how MySpace would suck up all these system resources, and I figured out it was the animated GIFs they were running were just killing me. So I might try it on that and see what happens. That'd be kind of cool. I started to say that Opera can identify itself as other browsers. This is handy for sites that have been written to block access by non-Internet Explorer browsers and yet actually work just fine in reality with other browsers. I like that you can do it by site because it means you're letting the good sites know that you access them with Opera and not making them think that everyone is mindlessly using IE. You can just change it to say it's IE when you get to the stupid sites. Opera also has a thing called widgets, which are sort of like extensions you can add in Firefox. They're little applications that make the browsing experience more interesting or useful. In some cases, they have nothing to do with browsing at all. I looked at a few widgets, and they're easily accessible under the widget menu when you click Select Add Widgets. That takes you to widgets.opera.com, where you can view editor's picks, highest rated, most downloaded, or by category. Once you click to download the widget you like, it comes in very quickly, and then it asks you to verify whether you really want to keep it. I thought that was kind of an odd question because you haven't gotten to play with it yet when it already asks you, "You sure you want to keep it?" I found the widgets fun to play with, and there might actually be some useful ones in there, but I was too busy playing with the silly ones. I did like the BitTorrent widget. It has a speedy interface to find torrents you're looking for and shows you the expected speed of downloads and then lets you add the torrents to Opera. In using Opera for BitTorrent, I got terrible download speeds. I don't know if that's because it was the first time I was using it and BitTorrent kind of works on a self-regulating system where it checks to see how much of you shared, and if you haven't shared a lot, you don't get high download speeds. But for my initial foray into it, I wasn't really very impressed with the speed. Opera also has a mini version for cell phones, so I checked it out on my BlackBerry. You can download that from mini.opera.com. You download the application, and the first thing it does is test the network connection. If it fails, just tell it to try again. My buddy Ron and I tested on both a BlackBerry and a Motorola Z3, both on the singular network. The first time you try to go somewhere, that's when it asks you to accept the end-user license agreement. I played with Opera Mini on the BlackBerry for a bit, and it seemed really nice, fairly quick, had an intuitive interface, and was very readable. I'll probably use it as my browser of choice for the BlackBerry. That is, until another shiny new browser comes along. The full Opera did have a few hiccups. For example, I can't see my Libsyn statistics at all, and I think that's a Java-based application. And it wouldn't show the graph for my podcast downloads on podtrack.com, and the Acura link to the new RDX vehicle was just a big old black screen. Off to Firefox, and the RDX looked great. I even got to see the new commercials for this really cool new car. I should mention that my husband is absolutely obsessed with the RDX, so if you want to join him in his obsession, check it out at acura.com/RDX. I did check in Opera to make sure that Java and JavaScript were enabled, by the way, but it still didn't work. Bottom line is that Opera has some really slick tricks up its sleeve, and I just brushed the surface of all it can do. There's reams of information about what else it can do on the site. I'll probably keep it around for a while, but until I can figure out how to get it to load Java and JavaScript, I won't be able to use it full time. In any case, check it out at opera.com. Well, all of the Mac sites are going nuts about the Worldwide Developers Conference, and since I wasn't there, I'd only be regurgitating what I heard, so I won't bore you with that. I did want to make mention of one very cool thing that will be in the new operating system, which is called Leopard, due out next spring. Apple already has a built-in voiceover capability, and they've had that for a long time. Basically, you can roll your cursor over menus and it'll read out loud where you are, which is very handy if you're blind. From what I've heard, it's actually pretty good. So VoiceOver is essentially what they call a screen reader, but instead of being hundreds of dollars like some of the applications you can get, it's free with the operating system. The one downside has been that the voice is really stiff and clunky. So Leopard, the new version, will contain a new voice named Alex, and it's absolutely fantastic.
In addition to the many new features of VoiceOver, Mac OS X Leopard also includes a new synthesized voice named Alex. Alex is based on an advanced new technology developed by Apple and has been optimized for the very fast speaking rates common to screen readers. It works in any application that uses Apple speech synthesis, including VoiceOver.
What do you think of that? Pretty clean, pretty clear, huh? Sounds almost like a real person. Maybe sounds better than me. Maybe I should have Alex read my podcast after it comes in. Anyway, Leopard's also going to support Braille. I want to give you a quote from Apple's website because I don't know a lot about how this works, but I thought it was interesting. VoiceOver in Leopard also adds new support for refreshable Braille displays and note takers. Leopard dynamically translates VoiceOver output into standard grade 2 contracted Braille, so you can attach any supported device and start using it right away. Anyway, I'm really excited about this because computers are such a mainstream part of our daily lives, everybody should be allowed to play. And Apple has actually been a little behind in some of these things, so especially in iTunes accessibility. So I'm glad to see the movie in the right direction. You can read more about their plans for accessibility at apple.com/macOSX/leopard/accessibility.html. Well, ages ago, when I first started the podcast, I used to always do a movie review. I haven't done that in a long time. I'm going to sneak one in here just for old time's sake. If you're anywhere near my age, where I'm nearly 50, you may have fond memories of Sunday nights with your family watching The Wild World of Disney. These shows were well filmed and always had a heart-wrenching story of animals against adversity. Even though you knew it would all work out in the end, they still somehow got you to sit at the edge of your seat. Well, Disney released the movie 8 Below a while back, but my husband and I just got around to renting it. It's the true story of 8 sled dogs abandoned in the Antarctic throughout an entire winter and the story of their survival. I felt like I was 12 years old again, tearing up at all the heartwarming points, actually jumping during one surprising scene, and then finally feeling really good at the end. I know I'm an old sop, but hey, it made me really happy. Well, it looks like that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the NoSillaCast. Remember to send your emails to allison@podfeet.com. And you can always send voice recordings to NoSillaCast@gmail.com. I really love getting feedback, ideas for products to review, and even quality control director Steve's nitpicky comments. Thanks for listening, and stay subscribed.